Okay, so the projects are all due today, and I assume that all of you have signed up for the TS project demos. You should make sure that you got a slot, and then you should get me one of these sheets. I'll put these also here in case you did not get a pre-filled version. There are some blanks here. This is for participation, what classes, how many classes you showed up, how many times you spoke up, how many times you wrote anything, etc., etc. I mean, there is no clean way of adding those numbers and dividing it by 7 to give you the participation credit, but it clearly is part of the input. Okay, if you, that's something that you can get me. Okay, so I think it would be nice if we did not have to have any exams, and you know, I'm sure you had enough of the project and all that stuff. So I was that close to kind of making all our lives easy, but then I noticed that Socrates says an unexamined life is not worth living, and I guess it probably also holds true for the courses, so we must have an exam according to Socrates. So you should do the mandatory block questions, the two of them. I know several of you have already examined the course yourself. The rest of you should make sure that you post your what you learned part. And then remember, there's one more part, which is reading the dub papers and suggesting you know, which paper you want other people to read. Okay. If you haven't done it, make sure that for that, for the first one, I believe today, end of day is the deadline. For the second one, it is basically next Tuesday is the deadline. And then next Tuesday is the final from 9:50 to 11:40. Don't show up at 10:30 at the normal class time, because by that time, you know, all the good parts of the exam might have been already over. So make sure that you show up at 9:50 is the exam. Okay, today I am essentially going to talk to you a little about information integration. Again, it could be a graduate level course, just that topic. And in fact, I probably am not likely to be particularly objective about it, because to the extent I work in this area, it's mostly in the information integration area. So which means I have a hard time differentiating trees from the forest. Okay, and also it's a kind of a much more active area. So I would at least give you an idea of what are the issues in information integration and how it connects to things that we have done in this course. Okay, and the idea is to do that up until 11:15, 11:20, and then spend the next 15 minutes or so wrapping up, essentially, for the course. Okay, so that's basically what I'm going to do. Are there any questions before I start? Yes?
Can we have a cheat sheet for the final, like the midterm?
That's probably going to be the case, but I'll send you an email. Okay. What? I'm completely confused. Which one? This is about what?
This is about grading.
So why did everybody get above 85%? He didn't want you to get it.
No.
And you
no,
still got it.
That's my question. Are you going to give an A to everyone who gets above 90%? Or because so many people get above 90%, you will give less grade.
I don't know. I mean, I have no... I'm not quite sure how to answer that question. I'm not sure what the question is
there. The question is, just because we're all too good, will you give lesser grades to us?
You guys are modest, at least as far as you are concerned. I don't know. I mean, no, as I think, you know, I mentioned this in the past, that I'm way more interested in making you sweat during the semester than afterwards, you know, and that's about the only thing I'm going to say about it, okay? Because it's an uncomfortable question to answer. Basically, if I were to say, oh, I always plan to give you all A pluses, then you guys won't study for the exam. Plus, you might say, I'm bribing you. And, you know, I think all you have to assume is, anyway, it's over. It's water under the bridge, right? You know, all the drop dates are over, and you know, you're basically stuck with this course. I think you guys did, you know, whatever you could do, and all I said is I have no interest in proving any point by necessarily making the course harder post facto. That's the stupidest way of making a course harder. You know, it has to be made harder during the semester, you know, and that's my philosophy. Okay. Okay. So, any other questions? Somehow, there seem to be significantly fewer people today. You think there is some sort of a way of dropping it just before the last class or something? Yeah, okay. Yeah, there should be like a minus 25% or something for anybody who drops the course. I should just remove them from here. Anyway, okay. So we are going to do information integration. It's a, in some sense, as I said, you know, this is actually, some of this stuff is based on a tutorial that I and Craig Knobloch gave a couple of times. The most recent one was in 2007. But every time, you know, this area is fast moving in general. And so if you want to get like a full view of just information integration, then go look at that tutorial. It's available on my webpage. But I'm going to just do a piece of it that sort of connects it to what we have done in this course already, so that you, in some sense, don't need the entire tutorial, because parts of that wind up repeating some things that we have done already here. Okay. So I'll just plug you into you know, the overall picture of information integration. The basic idea is that we started essentially, I mean, you know, there is this picture is by a guy called Arnezioni, and he has this thing called information food chain. I hate this picture because he was saying that just like there were herbivores which would eat trees, and then carnivores evolved on top of them. So in the information ecology too, there would be search engines which just basically look at the pages, and then after that you would start talking about services which connect information gleaned from multiple pages to answer questions. Okay, this is not too surprising to you. In the beginning we were just showing individual pages links, but then you want to be able to aggregate. Some queries would ask you to aggregate information from multiple pages, and they may not even be individual text pages, they could be data sources. They could be partly structured or semi-structured data sources. And in general, information integration is combining information from multiple sources to answer queries. Okay? So in a way, it's sort of going above the idea of just give me a link to the page. Okay, many things you have done up until now can be seen as information integration. For example, recommendation systems are integrating recommendations from multiple people to recommend something to somebody. Okay, so the word information integration, the phrase is a very general phrase. I'll try to tell you, you know, what kinds of work is going on under this umbrella and in what ways, what dimensions is it, you know, varying, and then end with one simple case study that currently is going on in my lab, so that, you know, I can tell you what, you know, what might be something a single system might look like. Okay, so basically you can do, there are many applications obviously, you may have used several of these. You have comparison shopping systems, you have portals integrating data from multiple sources to answer queries in some special area. You can have marketplaces, comparison shopping, marketplaces, these you probably know. For example, the travel services like Kayak and Expedia, many of you use, for example. Then in science, there's a huge interest, in science informatics, there's a huge interest in connecting up multiple structured and semi-structured data sources to answer queries over all of them. Okay, so there is that sort of applications going on. And in enterprise data integration, in companies, what happens is oftentimes there may be, apparently an average company has 49 different databases and they don't talk to each other. And so the question is, if you have a question that can be answered by combining data from different data sources, what is the best way to do it, you know, an automated way. So in fact, NSF, National Science Foundation, has been pouring a lot of money into information integration. And one time they said an example, a reason, a motivating example for them was at some point of time, the director in NSF asked, so how much money are we giving to historically black colleges, HBCUs, okay? Because they want to see how much, you know, funding are they able to give to HBCUs. And this information is out there in some databases that NSF maintains. But to actually answer that question, it took them 2 days, you know, because somebody had to manually go look at some database, plug that information to some other database, plug that information to some other database. Now, if I was Donald Rumsfeld, I would say that's exactly the kind of thing that happened in 2001, because all the information for deciding who might do something bad was there in different databases, but they were all essentially in different standards and there was no way of connecting the dots. Okay. So there is a lot of interest in combining data sources and answering queries. Yes, sir.
What is this descriptive data warehousing?
You will see that in a second. Okay, and keep that, you'll see that very much in a second. Okay. So here are some examples that you have seen, travel sites like Kayak, Expedia, Google Base, DBpedia. Anybody knows Google Base? It essentially allows you to enter essentially self-describing data. So you can decide what the schema is and start entering data with respect to that schema. So Google Base itself has many, many, many tuples of differing schemas. And it will try to support querying on that. Okay. So in that case, the integration is done by multiple sources pouring their data into one place, except they did not standardize the schema. Mashups are a primitive kind of information integration. Right, for example, there are many, many Google Maps mashups. Okay, so you want to connect one specific thing to maps, and then so that you click on it, it'll bring up the maps and, you know, Google Maps service and connect, you know, answer a specific query. Okay, so mashups can be, the way of thinking about this is mashups can be thought of as services where the query is pre-compiled into the system. There's only one type of query that you can do, and for that they have essentially combined multiple services or sources so that that query can be answered. Okay. General information integration sources might support multiple types of queries, and based on the query they might decide which sources to combine, for example. Okay. Here are kind of, you know, these are also sort of information integration sources, like, you know, examples like Libra, Sitesphere. For example, combine citation information from multiple sources and then are able to mine that, you know, to provide large-scale statistics on who is getting cited, what are the best conferences, what are the best journals in different areas, and so on. Okay, so there is, if you, even if you look at this, you see that they sort of differ in multiple ways. Okay, these all can be thought of as information integration systems, but they're also differing in many dimensions. And part of what I'll try to do today is give you the dimensions across which these can differ so that you can then pigeonhole each of them into that spectrum. Okay, one thing in the back of our head, one thing that you can keep in mind, you know, you can to think of information integration. You can think of this picture, which is if I can, you know, get individual pages, why can't I then glean the information from individual pages to answer aggregate queries? That's one motivation. Another motivation is to think of this fact that web is not just a bunch of HTML pages. It actually can have a large number of databases which put up a little web front end. And when a query is sent to them through a form or something, then they will dynamically generate an HTML page, okay, which looks like a web page, except that page didn't exist until it was made. Before that, the page existed as just tuples in the database. Okay, to the extent, in fact, we talked about this in the information extraction lecture too, to the extent there are databases out there behind web, then it would actually be nice to be able to combine those databases. And that winds up being a pretty big motivation for many people who are working in information integration. It's like a holy grail, you know, There could be many, many databases. Can we combine them all? As again as there could be many, many pages. Can we decide what are the right pages as the answer to your query? Okay. Now the interesting thing is, first question is, how many sources, how many databases might there be behind the web? And it turns out that if, you know, I'm not sure if you have heard about this before, but it turns out this was a while back's estimate. It might have increased. There may be as many as 25 million databases on the web. Okay? And most of the web really is accessible web. 80% of the accessible web is essentially being generated on demand by these databases, which get, you know, which will basically catch the query and then, you know, generate, you know, get the solution for that query on their data source and generate an HTML page. Yes.
When you say databases, do you mean strict databases or things like forums that are all?
Any of these. In fact, that was one of the things we talked about in the last several classes. When I say database, so there is a continuum between text sources on one end to strict RDBMS on the other end. Okay? There is more and more structured sources, which will essentially be putting their information out in some sort of a semi-structured or textual format. So you tend to think these are web pages, but really you can, if you realize that these are data sources, you may be able to do more interesting aggregation over them. Okay, now in fact, an interesting question is, if there's as many as these many databases, one interesting question would be, just as you had in on the web, the, in the normal page search, you had this issue of what are the relevant pages. Okay, now you go one level up and you have to ask yourself, given a query, what are the relevant sources that need to be queried and their results need to be combined to answer this query. Okay, so source selection becomes like a meta problem. You know, page selection is what we talked about in the beginnings of this course. Now, if you have really these many data sources on the web, then selecting the sources becomes another problem. And that might wind up having some of the same issues as page selection. Okay? So this is yet another motivation. There are multiple motivations for doing information integration, including the enterprise integration stuff that I told you, where many companies actually have existing databases, you know. They just are on different languages. There may be some of them are object-oriented, some of them are RDBMS, they all use different schemas, and they don't quite know how to combine them. So that could be also a motivation. Okay, so the problem then is, because there are multiple different motivations, people come to the information integration problem from different sides. And here are at least three different ways of looking at it. You know, IR and NLP guys are thinking, look, all I was doing was combining pages. It would be nice somehow if I can do question answering rather than just point to pages. Okay, so IR and NLP people tend to think of information integration as read the text, convert it into some sort of relational form. So do extraction, information extraction first, convert it into some sort of relational database form, and then support database style querying. Okay, that's a big enough thing for IR, because they are assuming that they have text-based files, and from there to go to structure itself is a big issue. Okay, so if you look at the problem from this side, the big issue becomes information extraction. And the moment you do information extraction, then you can just support database-style query processing. Now, of course, one interesting question would be that normal database technology assumes essentially quote-unquote deterministic databases. That means each tuple is either present in the table or not present in the table. I mean, in fact, a table just shows all the tuples that are actually present. Okay. Now, if you extracted a tuple from some text, and the extractor could be wrong, in the sense it basically is a, you know, sort of a heuristic program that tried to extract patterns from text, then the tuples that you are putting into the database are in essence uncertain. You're not quite sure whether that tuple is actually existing or not. So then you need to support, even if you don't combine data sources, you need to at least support probabilistic databases. You need to support reasoning with uncertain tuples. Okay? So that becomes the big issue from this side. And then there is this other side, other extreme, which is database people. who might be saying, look, instead of having one database, this company has 10 databases. And I want to somehow combine those databases. So they already have structured sources. They did not have to do as much extraction as IR people had to do. They didn't have to read text. They had actual data sources, except they used different schemas. Okay? In that case, the question then becomes, what's the best way to combine these databases such that they all can be queried with a single schema? So there is a mediator which has a mediator schema. You ask your questions in the mediator schema, and then the mediator rewrites the queries, reformulates the queries such that they are sent to the right databases in the right form. Okay? That becomes, that too is information integration. It's, these guys don't think about it as much because they're assuming that going from text to data itself is such a big deal that then, you know, after that they just stop. These guys more or less have structured data to begin with, okay? So that they have time to think about what to do to in terms of actually reformulate queries such that you can send them to different databases, okay? And then there is also sort of a web service view, which is sort of a procedural view where you can think of essentially web being made up of multiple services. Okay, where you give a call and it'll give a result out, and then you can pipeline this result into some other service, and then that will process that result and give another service, another result out. Okay, this really works well for mashups kinds of things, where if you have descriptions of web services, especially, I mean, we didn't talk about web services much at all in this course, but there are. To describe a web service, you know, you can think of a web service essentially, a service needs to be defined in terms of inputs, outputs. What does it take? What does it give out? Okay? And so you can think of it as some sort of an action which has input types and output types, and you can talk about description languages for web services. And there are several of them. One is WSDL, which is a web service description language. Guess what syntactic standard WSDL would use? What? XML. That's the thing. So there is at least some connection to what we've been talking about. Once you got XML, then you can use that to develop all sorts of specialized standards. So just, you know, just as you could talk about XML schema is in XML format. Similarly, web services can be described in WSDL, which is a agreed upon standard, which itself is sort of an XML variant. Okay. Now, if I give you service descriptions in WSDL format, then you can talk about how to combine multiple services. Okay. So, in some sense, if you are here, you can even think of information integration as a sort of a planning problem. In the sense, each service is an action, okay? And you have some input, you need to transform it into a different type, and then you need to decide what services should you pipeline this input through so that you will get the right type outside. Okay, so notice that all of these have been called as information integration. You know, in this case, you're focusing more on the extraction. In this case, you're focusing more on combining already structured data sources. Now, one other thing is between those two types is in the database view, you have multiple data sources. They're all structured, except they have different schemas. Extraction is easy because you know which field is, you know, for each tuple, this is field 1, this is field 2, this is field 3. Except the field 1 here is different from field 1 here is different from field 1 here. So you need to now have a different problem, which is essentially aligning the data and mapping their schema. Okay, so first you need, if these guys have different, for example, this guy had author and book information, this guy has writer and book information, somebody needs to figure out that author is the same as the writer. Okay, once again, that could have been predefined using some sort of an ontology beforehand, R, you need to learn that. Just like an extractor needs to figure out which part is the street name, which part is the zip code, here you need to figure out author and writer somehow are similar. Okay? So that becomes the idea of data alignment and schema mapping become much more important questions on this view. Okay? There is no reason to separate these. The only reason they're separated is there are people in IR who tend to work here, there are people in databases who tend to work here. One can think of an end-to-end solution which goes from text and connects, generates databases, and then combines the databases using this view. Okay? Yes. Again, any of them, you know, any structured data is better than text. So these guys, for example, might be considering combining object-oriented and RDBMS data sources. And in fact, that's where they all would, for example, make all of them put up an XML front end and support XQuery on top of them. Okay? Yes.
Mm-hmm. An author or anything, just return it all the way. So it looks like we can shift back and forth between the database and, you know, the NLP view based on application.
So there is, what you're saying is there may be a spectrum in terms of using versus not using structure. I'll get to that. I'll show you a picture, which more or less I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So here are, you know, here's my picture. So essentially, the web contains web pages, which you knew, but it also contains lots and lots of structured data because deep web is huge number of databases. It can actually contain sensors, you know, streaming sensors. So for example, currently I can find out what is the temperature in the Phoenix airport. And that just keeps changing because somebody is essentially entering, I mean, a sensor is entering the temperature every few seconds. Okay, so web also contains streaming data. Web contains services too. So information integration in its broadest sense is put up a single interface between your computer and all these things such that you can ask structured queries which will probably involve combining information gleaned from all of these to answer your queries, which is a nice blue sky kind of a problem. Okay. So the three approaches that you can actually distinguish currently for information integration, you can think of search model. Okay, search model essentially assumes everything are pages. If you have databases, convert them to pages. I sent a mail to somebody over the weekend about surfacing of the deep web. Okay, so if all you have is a big hammer, everything looks like a nail, or everything should be converted into a nail so that you can hit it on the head. Okay, so if you have an extremely good indexing and retrieval mechanism, okay, and that's very well suited for web pages, and somebody now is saying there's also structured data sources, you don't like them. What you do is you take essentially every tuple from the data source, convert it into an HTML page, index it. Okay, so in essence, you killed all the structure that is out there, but you're able to at least get answers for certain types of selection queries from these data sources without having to call them in within an SQL or a separate form. Okay, so the search model essentially says materialize all the pages. The web pages are already materialized. The data source tuples are also materialized into pages and they're indexed. And then, so you crawl and index them. Then you include them also in the search results. Currently, this is already being done. Okay. In fact, I think I may have mentioned this either in one of my mails or in the previous class that whenever you hear, let's say, Google has added government databases to its search engine, okay, you would think if you add government databases, maybe they're somehow doing integration over the data sources, joining the results from the different data sources. What they really do is essentially materialize all the results into separate web pages and then throw it into their big crawl and then also get you solutions from that. Okay? So that's one way. Okay? And there are interesting technical issues as to, for example, if you're doing only keyword-oriented search, can you at least improve it by providing structure along with the content? So you might say, in the author field, that following name should be there. Okay? That is one type of information integration. That's sort of a very shallow integration. It basically is losing all the structure and doing selection queries. Okay? There is a different point in the spectrum, which is basically the mediator model, where you provide like a single schema. Let's say if you are into RDBMS, you will provide a relational schema. Over this relational schema, the user would ask any structured query, SQL query on it. Okay, then this mediator essentially has a wrapper to each of the data sources. Okay, the wrapper is what we were talking about last time. Essentially, it just undoes the data sources textification of its tuples. Okay, and then converts it back into tuples, essentially. And so what you have is you take the query, the mediator takes the query, decides which sources to call, sends the query to those sources. Okay, the interesting problems, the challenges here will become reformulating a query into subqueries on the individual data sources. Okay, there's a large amount of work that's done there as to, for example, one very simple question is, from the point of view of databases, you guys know this idea called a view in databases. A view essentially is a query. Okay, so for example, if there's a big database, your users are only given different kinds of views into that database. They don't get to see the entire data. Okay? And so now, from the theory of views, you can actually talk about, if you have a mediator schema, you can either think of mediator schema as a virtual view, over all these databases. It's a union of these databases. Suppose you have schema 1, schema 2, schema 3, okay, you can think of the mediator schema as the union of, a tight union of these three schemas. That's one way. Okay, there you will say that the mediator, which is a global mediator, is a view over data sources. And an opposite way is you would say, the mediator schema existed in the world. Okay, it's completely virtual. And each of these sources are materialized views on the mediator schema. So the number of books in the world, there is no single source which probably might tell you all the books in the world. Every book source may be seen as a particular materialization over the mediator database. Okay, these are called GAV versus LAV. I won't get into it here, but if you are interested, you can look at the hidden slides. It turns out there are technical differences in whether you should look at it, whether you should do global itself as a view over the data sources, or you should look at data sources as materialized view on the mediator schema. Even that winds up having a distinction in terms of how the reformulation would be easy versus hard. Okay? Okay, so mediator model is the second type of idea where you design a mediator, you reformulate queries, you access sources, you collect results. This is much more like a database sort of an approach. Okay, a third idea which is sort of related to this is sort of related to the previous question on data warehouses. In this case, in essence, you get a query, you are still reformulating into data sources at the time of the query. Okay, and so it's like online access to the data sources. A data warehousing approach essentially says, I would go ahead, put all the data from different data sources into a single data warehouse. So not only have I picked up my mediator schema, but I also poured all the data sources into my mediator. So now I only have one single database. So at the query time, I can ignore these guys. And so it just becomes a direct database query. Okay, all the hard work gets done before that query reached me. At the time of query, I essentially just do direct straightforward database answer. Okay, now if you look at these three, to answer interesting questions, okay, let's say an interesting question for lack of better word, let's say an aggregate SQL query is an interesting question. Okay, to answer an aggregate SQL query here, what you do is after you get the results, you'll have a huge amount. So before you actually put these things in, you did nothing. Really, you just indexed all the pages. After you get the results, let's say suppose I wanted to know how many people are making more than $100,000 in US. Suppose you try to answer this query by this method, you will get a huge number of pages that might have information that you're looking for. So then after you get these text pages, you need to extract the structure from it, and then you need to combine that information to answer the query. So this is, to answer any useful query, you would have to do a huge amount of online work here. Or you could say, I'll just give you the pages, you do the reasoning yourself. Which Google does all the time, except for a single page, you don't mind. You know, if you are looking for, let's say, give me a page that describes this technique, and Google gave you 10 pages, and you clicked on one of them, and it gives you that technique, you are happy enough. If on the other hand, you said, give me all the, all the people who are making $100,000, and Google gives you, here are 100,000 pages. You know, just look through them and figure out for yourself who is making more and who is making less. I did get you the relevant pages because they're talking about salaries. The rest of the universe's pages don't even talk about salaries. So all you now have to do is take off from work for a couple of days and, you know, collate these results. Okay, so either you push it to the user, which becomes much less feasible in these kind of aggregate queries, or you just stick to simplistic queries, only selection queries. Okay? But the amount of work that you do online has is the maximum. If you must answer the query, you do the maximum online work here. In contrast, you do much less online work here because all the hard work has been done in putting all the data sources into a single data warehouse. And this is in between, because you still do some amount of reformulation and reach the sources. Yes. That's a good question. So normally then the issue is the scope of the information. So the more of these kinds of approaches need you to pick up a single mediator schema. And so they kind of become domain specific. So suppose you might write, the Jungly system that I mentioned last time, which did one, all the employments were put into one single, employment ads were put into a single data warehouse. Okay, what they would do is they would have highly paid employees who would actually write these wrappers for New York Times, Washington, Post, etc., download the employment ads, put them in their single schema, and then during the day, essentially, they are answering queries just on their schema. I'll get to it, okay? Now, the interesting thing, of course, is now that I put you this, one issue is the amount of online work being done, in these three. See, don't think of these as just three different approaches. These are three approaches in a spectrum of approaches. Okay? Now, on this end, you do a lot of online work to answer any query. But you don't need to do any infrastructure other than having indexes. On this end, you do a huge amount of online, putting data into one single format. But then during the query time, you just directly answer the queries. To the extent databases are efficient, you can still answer these. Okay, a related question, I still get back to you. A related question is, if you are going, let's say comparing this to this, okay, you should be able to talk about trade-offs between these architectures. For example, if I put it in a data warehouse, and if the sources are changing, data warehouse is a useless architecture. So for example, Would you think data warehousing is a good architecture for travel meta services like Expedia and Kayak, etc.? So Kayak and Expedia overnight get their best deals, put it in the database, and during the day they'll tell you what the best deals are. That's kind of useless. Why? Because the prices keep changing during the day. Yeah, that's fine. I mean, if you're recrawling, if in fact the amount of refresh is too high, then there is no difference between this and this, right? It only is good for, like, for example, constitutional questions, which thankfully doesn't change that often. So you warehouse those, okay? But things like temperature questions or the, you know, travel ticket questions, it doesn't make as much sense. Employment ads, it makes sense because, you know, once a day, at least in the old days, once a day people will post the employment ads in the newspaper. So during the day, Zhangli could just answer queries based on yesterday night's employment ads. Leo had a question.
No, I'll just answer
it. Okay. So the point is that, again, so depending on, you know, the model you use, there are different kinds of challenges. If you especially use this model, which sort of winds up having the difficulties of both this and this, interesting challenges from both of these, and, you know, in this model, for example, you need to do wrappers, which is extraction of information, source alignment, which is sort of schema mapping, data alignment, which is value mapping, because the same value might be represented differently. You know, author in this source may have been represented as F dot Kambham Party, and the other source was represented as R dot Kambham Party, and a third source was represented as Subbarao Kambham Party. It's the same value. It's not schema, it's value uncertainty. And then you need to realize that it's the same entity. Okay? And then, of course, on top of it, you have to do query processing where you have to do reformulation. The reformulation doesn't exist in the warehouse architecture because everything is in the same database. Okay, and then most of these don't exist here because you're ignoring the structure and you're hoping somebody else will take the results and extract the structure from them and answer the queries themselves. Okay, so this is the picture that I was mentioning. I'm not going to details of this, but this sort of sets up one spectrum of approaches with, for example, this end is least work at the query time, most work upfront, which means data warehousing approaches. And this one, most work at the query time, least work upfront, which means search style approaches, this style approaches. Okay, rather than think of them as three completely distinct pieces, three completely distinct architectures, you can actually say that there's a spectrum of architectures which do more work upfront and are able to extract the structure and do less work at the query time. Okay, so that's essentially in this picture, these three things, this one, this one, this one, will occur. The search side will occur here, the warehouse side will occur here, the online will occur somewhere in the middle. Okay? Now, one other thing I want to do is to get you some idea of the dimensions of variation of the information integration problem. I give you some in terms of the architecture types itself. But how, whether or not the problem is difficult is going to depend upon at least these things. Okay, these are sort of qualitative dimensions. It matters as to what type of data sources you're trying to integrate. If they're all text sources, extraction becomes a front and center problem. If they're all data sources, then essentially extraction is not a problem. Schema mapping and data alignment is a bigger problem. If it's a mix, then you have the best or worst of both worlds. Okay. Type of integration, is it a vertical or horizontal or both? Okay, this is an interesting way of looking at it. The idea of a vertical integration means there are essentially multiple sources. They're all sending approximately the same type of information. And you are combining them all together to get either the best deal possible or the, all the possible results and so on. So for example, travel sources, book sources, they're all vertical integration. All book sources are providing the same kind of information, and you're trying to find out who is selling the cheapest book. Or who is, or sometimes you want to combine the results from the sources to figure out what are all the movies that a particular, you know, director, Zhang Yimou, has made. And different movie sources might be partial in their coverage. Okay, so you need to call all of them and collate their results to get the full list of movies that are at least listed by any of the sources on the web. If Zhang Yimou made one movie that's not listed in any of the sources on the web, you know, tough luck to you. Okay, so that's vertical. The horizontal is here is source one, here, and then here is source two, and then here is source three, and you sort of take the tuples from here, join it with this to answer the query. So that means they're essentially providing different kinds of information, and you need to combine the information. So for example, so you need wind up doing joining during the query processing. Okay, so where do mashups fall, vertical or horizontal integration? The usual mashups, horizontal. Okay, where do vertical and where do comparison shopping services fall? Vertical integration. In the worst case, you would have both horizontal and vertical. In the worst case, actually, you'll have much worse than even horizontal and vertical. So, for example, suppose this is the universal relation. Okay, suppose I have sources of this form. So each source, that basically means it is exporting that piece of the relation. Now what happens? It's neither horizontal nor vertical. Okay, in essence, taking these sources, somehow you're trying to reconstruct the universal relation. Fragments of the sources are being taken to reconstruct the horizontal, you know, vertical relation. It's like the Big Bang Theory, where taking the fragments of the galaxies, we're trying to figure out what happened in the beginning. Right? So that would also matter. I mean, so some specific applications might just focus on vertical integration, like comparison shopping. And so you can forget about the horizontal parts. Some will be only focusing on the horizontal part. That will also be easy. If you have both, then it's much harder problem. Okay, level of upfront work, I already told you this, ad hoc versus pre-orchestrated integration. Okay, so for example, the level of ad hocness could essentially mean that after the query comes, you go out onto the world and figure out what are the relevant sources, set up the mediator schema over those sources and answer this query. That's a truly ad hoc. So after the query comes, you figured out what are the relevant sources. Okay, if you do at least this, that means you have figured out which sources you're going to query during the query time. Except you have to decide which subset of them are the most relevant given the query you have on hand. Okay, pre-orchestrated, this is more pre-orchestrated than the previous version I was saying, where after the query comes, you go out onto the world and try to figure out which sources are worth, you know, are relevant to this query. Okay. By the way, I'm going through this slide because I'm running out of time, but for each of these, there is a separate slide. I'll just skip over them so you can read them later on. Control over sources becomes an extremely important issue. One of the issues is if you try to bring in database style technology to information integration problem, for example, how many of you have heard this idea called distributed databases? Okay, what's the difference between information integration and distributed databases? In the case of, yes, go ahead.
For distributed databases, that's for use in application,
right? Where there's parts of information in different places. Yeah, that is true too. So it looks like that's what happened. So here is a distributed database, different pieces in different parts. Instead of this whole database existing in one place, pieces are in different places. So this is the same picture for distributed databases as well as information integration. What's different?
You control the distributed database.
Exactly. Distributed databases, you are distributing stuff all over the world, but you exactly know where you kept each thing. You know it all. Database manager. Okay, you just put them in different places for replication, for fault tolerance, for just, you know, speed of delivery, etc., etc. Information integration, however, on the other hand, the more general information integration is over autonomous sources. Just like web, data sources are also autonomous. Anybody can put up a data source and say, I'm going to send you all the Chinese movies in the directors, and I can make up the names, and you cannot sue me, especially if I'm outside China, right? So you cannot do anything. I can put up the exact same things. I can put up random HTML pages. I can put up random data sources. And how they, which parts of this universal relation they are actually exporting, whether or not they essentially call those pieces the same or not, all of that is up for grabs. So autonomy makes a big difference, the source of autonomy. And one other, you know, more mundane thing that autonomy makes a difference about is if you are, for example, you know, somehow lived long enough to figure out which sources are relevant and you just want to efficiently do query processing over them. Those of you who have taken a database course might know that, you know, optimization in the query optimization is a big subject. Okay? Given a query, you can run it in a very inefficient way versus very efficient way. And to decide to run it efficiently, you need source statistics such as selectivity statistics, etc. Who is going to give that to you? If you own all the databases, you can just, you know, overnight do all the selectivity statistics generation, and then next day you use them. If these are all somebody else's data sources, then essentially you need to sample this information. You need to learn it by sampling. So everything that you take for granted in a central database becomes a challenge in an information integration kind of a scenario. Right? Okay, so that's a very big deal, control over sources. Type of output, whether you're just giving answers or you are supposed to be giving, it's enough to just give pointers. If you have to give answers, then remember, this idea sucks. Right, here are 100,000 pages, you know, read them and figure out who is making more and who is making less money. And then you answer your own question. Do you see what I'm saying? You know, when I first said, search engines just tell you where an answer might be found, not what the answer is. It didn't look like that was a big deal, because if the answer is a single number that is present in one of the single files, then you just read the file and figure out the answer. If the answer requires you to process 100,000 pages, then you'll start realizing what you take for granted when you do aggregate queries on structured data sources. Okay? So it matters whether, you know, what kind of output you're supposed to give. And then finally, the generality of the solution, which is relevant to something I think one of the students was asking, which is, is it a domain-specific one? Is it supposed to work only over travel services, in which case you generate a single mediator schema, just works for travel services, versus a more multi-domain mediator, in which case it needs to be, I mean, I don't even know what it means to do universal mediation. Okay, if it's a multi-domain mediator itself, that means the mediator schema now is a disjunction of multiple domain schemas. And so you first, looking at the query, you need to figure out what the domain is, and then you need to figure out what the relevant sources are. Okay, so as I said, each of those are written in each of these slides. I'm just going to give you, you know, since these are all high-level discussions, I thought I will at least give you one example of some of the ways in which these problems might come in if you're doing a single information integration scenario, okay? So the one that I will look at is something currently close to my heart. You'll see why in a minute. It's one of my students who's working on this. Essentially, if to the extent there are supposedly huge number of sources, data sources on the web, and if you give a query, you need to figure out what the relevant sources are, just as you need to figure out what the relevant pages are. Now, of course, after figuring out what the relevant sources are, then you need to collate the results from those k relevant sources and answer the query. So the question is, what does it mean to pick sources? What is picking relevant sources supposed to mean, as against picking relevant pages? And in particular, on the web, given that a source is not necessarily curated, it's not verified, it's not endorsed by anybody. Okay, much of the time what might happen is many of these structured sources are sending made-up data. are corrupted data. Okay, so one of the questions would be picking relevant sources essentially involves also figuring out which of these are trustworthy sources. It's just one example. I mean, you know, I sort of, in the previous slide, I sort of sketched a universe of problems, and I'm just going to look at one of them right now. Okay, you can figure out how many other problems are still need to be solved to make this system work. But let's assume I have multiple sources in front of me, and I need to figure out which sources are trustworthy, which are not trustworthy. Okay, assume that VeriSign is not in the business of deciding which sources are trustworthy. That would be a semantic web kind of a solution. You pay money to VeriSign, VeriSign will look into your source and say, okay, you are trustworthy. And so then I would be able to take them. But if that's not given, I need to essentially figure out automatically which sources are trustworthy. Which is the same question as which pages are trustworthy in some sense. How did we answer that? Last time around when we looked at that, we answered page trustworthiness by considering the endorsement between pages through the links. Can we do something like that here? Okay. Again, the solution I will tell you is something that is just happening right now. So I have no idea whether this is actually textbook level material or not. As I said, we started with textbook level material and frayed into things that are like currently bleeding edge, which means it might be forgotten tomorrow. Okay, but you can take it. But the reason it's interesting, I think, for this class is in doing this, you'll wind up using the techniques that you heard of already. So you'll at least make sense of something, you know, that you already know how to do. Okay, so if you want to do endorsement, then the question is, how do you get explicit links between the sources? There are no links between the sources. One idea is the following. Suppose I send a sampling of queries to the sources, and anytime sources agree with each other, in some sense, they are endorsing each other, bidirectional endorsement. Okay? And if they don't, then essentially there is, you know, so basically the strength of these links essentially can be thought of as I sent a bunch of queries to all these sources, I looked at the results, compared which results came, you know, which results were sent both by this guy and this guy. Okay? And use that to decide of the number of common results divided by the total number of results. That would tell me how much is the sort of implicit endorsement between the sources. Okay? Yes?
So are these sources the database itself or entries?
Good question. For now, the way I made it is just direct data sources. Databases. Let's assume for now, but to be able to do this, they should all have the same exact schema so that I can tell whether, and they should not have open domains. That means Rao Kambham Party is listed exactly the same way by everybody. There's no R Kambham Party, S Kambham Party, and Subbarao Kambham Party nonsense. And they all have the same schema. That means there's no author and writer nonsense. In which case, then I can just combine the number of sources, number of, you know, results that are common. And even here, I need to pick up a sampling of queries because they are autonomous sources. I can't just go into them and see how many things are common. Okay, just like I can't go into your mind and see what you have understood about this course. I have to sample you by, you know, giving my exam. Right? So I have to send sample queries and then look at their cardinalities and then figure out what is the link structure. And once I get that link structure, then I can do something like a page rank calculation on this implicit link structure. So far, so good. I even decide that I'll call that source rank. And the idea would then be that the sources which have higher source rank may sometimes be slightly be more trustworthy. There are second order issues here. For example, I could have a whole bunch of sources, just like in page forms. In the normal pages, you can have page forms which will artificially boost the trustworthiness of a page by putting links between huge number of fake pages and then putting a link from them to another fake page. Same thing can happen in the sources. There may be a multitude of fake sources which agree with each other so much that they will become the most trustworthy ones. So to deal with that second order problem, you essentially also have to consider how correlated are the sources to begin with. Before I even got you a query, if you are always saying the same thing, then, so remember how you say, like you are trying to ask, suppose you have a tough decision about your life to make, and you're trying to ask your friends for opinion. The assumption is if two independent friends both say, do it this way, then you will say, yeah, maybe two people said that, I should do it. But if I tell you that those two friends talked to each other and decided to give you the same information, same recommendation to you, then you discount that recommendation. If over a period of time you found that Tom and Mary are mirror images of each other and they say the exact same thing, then you just ask one of them. Okay? So you can extend this analysis to take into account source level correlation, and then if there's a too high a source level correlation, then that is discounted from the result correlation. Okay? That's fine. But the other problem now is the one that Roy was asking, which is there are really not too many deep web data sources which all use the exact same schema and do not have and have closed domain. They will have different schemas, they will have different names for me. I mean, different ways of saying the same entity. Okay, so more likely what you have is, so imagine that these are all movie sources, or movies and CDs, etc. sources. Okay, now you might have, as the results from one source might look like this: Godfather, paperback, used, $9.99. Another one says, paperback, The Godfather, $13.99. This is not out of the realm of feasibility, right? You have seen enough sources which say things like this, and you would read these and say, yeah, they're talking about the same thing, or they're talking about different things. But in answering that, you essentially had to first figure out which pieces here correspond to pieces here. And then, so I, for example, have to realize that Godfather here, if I just directly compare it to paperback, its similarity is zero. What I should be doing is I should compare Godfather to this, The Godfather. And even when I compare Godfather to The Godfather, I should say that Godfather and The Godfather are quite similar. Okay, whereas Godfather and Happy Godfather may not be as similar. Why? Because the word the might have low IDF. It's being used in that particular field too often. Okay, so the idea that I'm trying to sketch is I'm going to combine these. I will basically, once you tell me which field here corresponds to which field here, I will find the similarity using TF-IDF, something you know. However, I have to figure out the matching problem at the same time as finding the similarity. So in essence, what I'm actually trying to do is dynamically find a mapping between the fields here to fields here, such that I can get the maximum match possible. This is sort of, stable match. This is sort of maximal matching problem between two graphs. Okay, and you can actually, there are ways of doing this. It's not that hard a thing. You wind up doing this in many different situations, but in this case too. In fact, there may be, for example, the used should not be mapped onto anything, because that field doesn't exist here. You and I know it, and your system has to figure that out automatically. Having figured that out, then you will be able to figure out how close these two are. Notice that what I took for granted, which is the number of things that are common between the result set, is now itself a hard problem of figuring out which records are the same as which other records. And this is a challenge problem called record linkage problem. And this is something that lots of people have to deal with in trying to deal with semi-structured sources on the web. Yes. That's a very good question, but that's the kind of what I'm saying is you do have an entry into that world through TF-IDF kind of ideas plus this matching stuff. Okay? And so there is a system like this. You can try out. There is I think Raju Balakrishnan actually is a student who's working on this. He built this kind of a system, which I barely described it, and there is a little paper that he has you can read if you're interested. And it works on, it's a domain specific search engine over data sources. And this is, for example, if you go here, you can make it to search over book sources, or you can make it search over movie sources. And in each case, it computes the source rank and uses that to figure out what are the trustworthy sources. And then, you know, you can do your experimentation, etc. And the last thing I want to point out is, mostly to end it on a kind of a self-congratulatory note, over on Friday, WWW, World Wide Web Conference, got over, and that's why I'm making you read the papers in that. They have a poster session and a paper session, and this particular poster got the best poster award. Okay? So you should read that. At least it'll make me happy. And more importantly, write a paper and cite it. Remember what I told you all through the semester. Okay? That would improve everybody's happiness. But again, what all I wanted to say in this particular part was to say, even solving something as simple as figuring out what is a relevant source involves things that you thought of. EFIDF, page rank kind of calculation, plus a little bit more, such as record linkage, which itself can be, you know, simple extensions of what you know. That gets me to the last part of the lecture, which is, so I'm going to stop information integration itself there. Okay, there's a huge amount. I can do at least half a semester course, and it may not be as cleanly all tied up as this is. If you think this is not tied up to begin with, then you have to hear how information integration is going to be. But it's a great area, and you know, there is also a connection to this course in some sense, because you are now talking about combining and supporting aggregate reasoning over the web. Okay, so I have 10 minutes, and according to that watch, and I don't know whether I am not, I really have 10 minutes. So let me see what we did. I think I'll go very quickly. We said we will, at the end of this course, you should be at least able to answer this question, and please tell me you can answer this. Okay, at some level of significance, you should be able to figure out how search engines work. Can web be seen as collection of semi-structured data sources? That's what we've been talking about in the last several classes. Can useful patterns be mined from pages and the data sources on the web? Okay, I think we have talked about those things. And I said the main topics are information retrieval, integration, aggregation, which is what we've been talking about recently, information mining, we talked about data mining and recommendation systems, and other topics such as social networks. Okay, and I also mentioned that much of this course is really adapting existing fields to the new age of web. And we talked about text retrieval and how it is connected to traditional IR. You know, web retrieval is connected to traditional IR. Much of the work on integration is connected to databases. And the data mining is really connected to classification and clustering, which is, you know, basic machine learning ideas. These were the topics we actually covered. I would not go into this, but essentially, these are the number of lectures we spent on each of these. You can look at to see which topics got more coverage, etc. But at least we, you know, looked at all of them. I mentioned in the beginning of the semester that there are some bigger ideas that you want to keep track of. And I hope that at the end of this semester now, you can think of whether or not and how these big ideas are actually coming through in the stuff that we have done, and whether you can come up with bigger ideas. Okay? One of which we talked about is finding sweet spots in the computer-mediated cooperative work, where you sometimes can send the hard work to the user. You know, that's what search engines do. We'll find you the page, and then you figure out whether the information you want is on that page. It's easy to do in that case, but in the integration, if I have an aggregate query, we'll find you the 100,000 pages. You figure out what the average employee salary is yourself. You'll get mad at the search engine. Okay? And what is the right sweet spot for different kinds of tasks is something that you need to understand. And the classic thing I mentioned in the beginning of the class is bag of words. We kept doing a lot of bag of words. You can do bag of shingles, and you can do bag of letters. Bag of shingles, too costly. It's better, but it's too costly. Bag of letters, just think about it. In a language like English, there are only 26 letters. So most files are extremely similar to each other from the bag of letters perspective. We also talked about brain cycle stealing and how we can use the fact that web is made up of multiple users and using that to make certain types of querying faster. And for example, we talked about Aardvark in the beginning of the semester, and then we also talked about collaborative filtering. And then there's a lot of interesting work that's going on the web, which basically try to get people to do work for them, either free or for pittance. Okay? We also talked about the fact that web is not random text. It is made of files that are made by people. And that wound up being used in pretty much everything we did. We did extraction, information extraction patterns were working only because everybody writes more or less the addresses in approximately the same way. You know, the postal address is approximately in the same way. Okay? There are certain unwritten rules that people follow when they make text files even. And so to the extent it's not just a random collection of text, you can find those patterns and use them. And that's why, in fact, several of the problems that would upfront look infeasible wind up being feasible because web is made by humans. Okay? And then this one, I don't know whether I mentioned it or not, but web is autonomous, adversarial. Okay? You could try to make the first generation ideas on the web make too generous an assumption about the good intentions of the sources on the pages. Okay, but then you already found out page forms exist, so page rank can be defeated. Source forms can exist, so source rank can be defeated. You could try to say, I will control the creation rights so that only people who completed 494 and an ethics course will get to put pages on the web. Okay, but that completely defeats the essence of scalability of web. Even if you don't like, even if you don't have particular issues about civil liberties and all this fun stuff, web would just not scale if only a few people are allowed to make pages. As Henry David Thoreau, I think, said, woods would be very, very silent indeed if only those birds sang that sing the best. The reason woods are like cacophonous is because everybody is trying to sing. Okay? And the web is increasing in size because everybody is allowed to say anything they want. And as a computer scientist, you are supposed to not stop people by putting them in jail, but to figure out automatically what are trustworthy pieces of information, what are not. Okay? We have seen that across the course, trust rank to deal with the trustworthy sources, and today, for example, source rank to deal with the source trustworthiness issues. Okay, last two slides. Yes, sir.
There is also this explanation of wisdom of crowds.
Mm-hmm. That was also, that was in the collaborative thing, for example. So the last two slides. So I like this slide thing. In the beginning of the century, apparently, this guy, John Barclay, was a great anatomist. And then he was asked to give a keynote address to an anatomy conference. And he said the following thing to the gathered anatomists. You know, these are the people who cut you and find out what you are made of. Okay? And he says, first, anatomy can be likened to a harvest field. First come the reapers who, entering upon untrodden ground, cut down the great store of corn from all sides of them. These are the early anatomists of Europe. They more or less solve the big problem. Then come the gleaners who gather up ears enough from the bare ridges to make a few loaves of bread. Such were the anatomists of the last century. Last of all come the geese, who still contrive to pick up a few grains scattered here and there among the stubble and waddle home in the evening, poor things, cackling with joy because of their success. The geese are the happiest creatures, but they're really picking a few kernels of corn. And so this is, you know, Barclay thought this was a good uplifting message to start the anatomist conference, saying, gentlemen, you're all geese. All the important stuff has been done. You're just picking little kernels and you cackle home. You know, don't ever call Barclay to give keynote addresses. Okay. My message as the ending message of this course is exactly the opposite. If you took physics 101, probably all the easy problems have already been solved, and physics 909 is when you start having the first access to problems that you can solve to change the world. Okay. Unlike anatomy of Barclay's day, web is still young. We're just figuring out how to tap its potential. Page rank notwithstanding, authority subs notwithstanding, there's so much that we haven't done yet. Okay? So I think you can be much bigger than geese. You go cut yourself some corn. That's all. Thank you.